Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. I'm flying solo today. Chris is not here. Chris was supposed to be here. He's not. He's in the other clinic. He's in San Bernardino. I'm in Irvine. So it's just me today flying solo with you guys and gals, but I love doing that. So I just did a video on YouTube, and it's about 9-minute video. How to level up in clinical research, some of the many opportunities in clinical research, and how you can level up. So it's very important. You've got to know what you're trying to get out of something when you get into it. You have to have a game plan. It's astonishing how many people get into something without really knowing or having a plan of what they want. And then the issue with that becomes your decision making gets a lot more difficult, and you get into situations where you truly don't know how to respond or what to do because you don't have a game plan. So what is your end game? I just talked to someone today. I talked to several people today, but one person in particular works for a big CRO. I'm not going to mention which one, but you can guess. Take one guess, you'll figure it out. And this person, she indicated that, you know, she's put in this particular department, but was given zero training, and was given zero training, but is expected to perform a particular task. She was put in a department. And I asked her, I said, okay, that's great. She called me to ask some questions about that particular job because she's wasn't very knowledgeable about it. And I said, okay, first of all, what is your end game? Are you trying to be a CRA? What are you trying to do? So this person was not interested in being a CRA. It was something very specific, a very specific function at a CRO that she was interested in learning more about. But she knew she had a roadmap. She knew what she wanted to get. So her decision making becomes easy because you have that North Star that you can follow. Right? So same thing with anyone. And by the way, your roadmap can change once you learn more about this industry. So if you're someone brand new to this industry, you may think you know what you want to do. We've been doing the CRA Academy for over a year now, a year and a half. And it's amazing how many people think they want to be CRAs. Then they take our academy and they realize, hey, CRA is actually not for me. What I really want to do is be a coordinator. Or what I really want to do is open my own research site. I actually get that a lot. And that's one of the leveling up topics we're actually going to talk about today. So having a roadmap, knowing what you want, and you can change it, but you should have a plan. Like if you have no experience and you want to be a CRA, or you think you want to be a CRA, good. That's your plan. So you need to know, you need to break that down and have a plan for how to get to that particular job, right? Or that end result. And that end result can change during your journey. Let's say you become a study coordinator and you interact with a lot of CRAs and you realize, hey, I don't actually want to be a CRA. What I actually want to do is own a site, or what I actually want to do is work for a CRO as a project manager, or work for a CRO as a site startup specialist or a feasibility analyst. There's so many different opportunities. This industry gets confusing. There's not really any material out there, any content. So that's why I wanted to create this podcast and just go in depth on the video that I kind of did a Cliff Notes version over on YouTube. So go to YouTube and check it out, Dan Sfera. And also go to Instagram and direct message me with questions if you have any questions. So there's so many opportunities in this industry, all right? Well, I'm going to focus on just a couple. There's many more than this, and I'm only going to speak about the ones that I know of, that I know enough about to where hopefully I can be of resource to you, or a solid resource to you. So I don't know anything about being a medical monitor. I'm not a doctor, but I do know that that is one way to level up if you're an MD or a physician, and let's say you're a principal investigator, but you don't like being a principal investigator, that's another opportunity, medical monitor. So I don't know anything about what it takes to be a medical monitor or what the job is like, other than my own experiences with medical monitors as a study coordinator or as a site owner. But obviously I can't talk too much about things I don't know very much about, right? But I can show you, I can at least guide you and show you the roadmap for some common opportunities in this industry, and then how to level up with those opportunities in this industry. So the first one is how to be a CRA. So a lot of people get into this industry with the idea that they want to be a CRA, which is a clinical research associate. And that's great. That's really good. And then you can change your mind. I tell a lot of the students that join our academy, go to the CRAacademy.com if you're interested in learning more about it. I tell a lot of the students who start doing the internship, they wanted to be CRAs, and then they realize, well, they actually want to open their own sites. So your roadmap can change. But let's say you want to be a CRA, which seems to be the most popular job out there in clinical research right now, at least the most popular public facing job in this industry. I believe that Forbes wrote an article a couple years ago on the most lucrative employment positions you can have in any industry, and clinical research associate CRA was like top five. I think it was number three. So that definitely put CRA on the map as far as the public is concerned. So I've gotten a lot of demand for my CRA Academy, but these people also don't know what a study coordinator is. They don't know what a research assistant is. They don't know what a sub-investigator is. They don't know what a research site owner is. So they know what a CRA is. They get started on the roadmap, and then they realize later, hey, I'm going to take a detour and actually do this. And that's great. But let's assume you want to be a CRA. How do you do it? It's very difficult to become a CRA without having some kind of experience in the clinical research industry. You don't need a lot, but you do need some. And yes, sometimes you can get lucky. And I know INC Research is one of the big CROs right now. They're actually hiring. Every year, and I know some of the other CROs do similar things, at least some of the big ones. Once a year, because there's such a huge demand for CRAs, and there's such a shortage of them right now, once a year, they typically bring on a group of entry-level CRAs, people who have zero industry experience, and they train them on how to be CRAs. Typically, these people are nurses or have some kind of science or healthcare-related background. You need at least a bachelor's degree to be a CRA. I know there's cases of CRAs that do not have bachelor's degrees that are CRAs, but it's rare. It's unicorns. It's a black swan. It doesn't happen that often. All right. So you can get lucky and get, serendipity. You can just find one of these CRA entry-level positions. Just got to time it right. They never say, the CROs never say when they're hiring entry-level. They just do it once a year. Sometimes they don't, but usually they do. I know they're doing it right now. So if you're listening in July of 2017, apply now. But for the most part, 90% of the time, you're going to need some kind of experience. So you're going to need 2 years of study coordinator experience, right? So then you got to look at, how do you become a study coordinator? Sometimes study research sites, research clinics, hire study coordinators with zero experience. Most of the time, they prefer someone with a little bit of experience. So let's say you don't have any experience as a study coordinator. How do you level up to become a study coordinator if every job that you're going to as a study coordinator is requiring some experience? Well, you can be a research assistant. You can go into work at a research clinic as a data entry specialist. You can do my favorite and become a patient recruiter and then work your way into the favor of these research clinics if you're providing something of value to them, in this case, patients, because 99% of clinical trials are delayed because of lack of enrollment. So you're actually helping solve a huge problem if you're able to do that. Become a patient recruiter. It doesn't matter what it is. If your end goal is to become a coordinator and then a CRA, you do whatever it takes to get hired as a study coordinator. So get into that clinic. Any job you can take. Of course, one that you can afford the salary. I understand people have bills and they can't work for free, but if you can, do it. Do what you can to get into that research clinic somehow, and then work your way up to become a study coordinator. And then when you are a study coordinator, work your way up to become a CRA. All right. Usually takes 2 years of study coordinator experience to get considered for a CRA entry level CRA position. Okay. Now, once you're a CRA, you can level up from there. So you can become a clinical team lead or a lead CRA. And the lead CRAs are senior CRAs. So usually 5 to 10 years of experience or more as a CRA until you can become considered to be a lead CRA. What a lead CRA does is they don't necessarily go to sites anymore unless there's a problem site or there's a new CRA that they need to do a co-monitoring visit with, where they're training that new CRA on how to do a site visit. Usually the lead CRAs work either from home remotely or in-house at the CRO offices, and they're looking at you being the CRA, your monitoring report. They're dealing with the sponsors. They're dealing with issues as they come up. Every study has dozens of fires that need to be put out on any given week. So they're sponsor facing and they are site facing, whereas the CRA is primarily just site facing, although they do have interactions with the sponsors. Sometimes the sponsors will join you for co-monitoring visits, or sometimes the sponsors will audit the CRA's work. So there's that. But once you're a CRA, you can become a lead CRA, a senior CRA, or even a project management, or you can be like many of my clients, a growing segment of my client base with DSCS, Sweat Equity and Investments. We actually help people start their own research clinics across the country. And a growing segment of these clients of ours are CRAs, usually senior CRAs, that have had enough. Right? Because it's a stressful job. That's one thing the Forbes article didn't mention. Yeah, the pay is great, but it's stressful. You're traveling a lot. And even when you're not traveling, there's just so many fires to put out, especially on global studies. The sites from Europe will call you like at 3 a.m. And if you're the project manager or the lead CRA, that you're sort of where the buck stops, right? So a level up for these people would be owning a research site. I've had some CRAs so stressed out with their job, they want to level down and become study coordinators, and they'll gladly take the pay cut from CRA, which typically you get about $80,000-$85,000 a year. some a lot more, some a little less, to a study coordinator, which is anywhere from 40 to 65. Again, some a lot more, some a little less, depending on the organization. I've had some CRAs want to level down because their jobs are so stressful. So there's options. You just need to know, and you need to have a game plan to reach those things. So let's go to the common level up of a site owner. Okay, so if you're a study coordinator and you don't have a bachelor's degree, or maybe you do and you want to level up, but you don't want to level up to be a CRA, maybe because you've had lots of interactions with your CRAs and you just don't want to deal with the stress that you can see on their faces sometimes when they come to the clinic, or sometimes they'll just be up front with you and they'll tell you that they don't like their jobs. I've had one CRA 3 years ago, I believe it was around 2012, at one of my sites ask me if I'd be willing to hire them as a coordinator. And I told them, yeah, but you're not gonna, I can't pay you what you're currently getting paid. And they said, no, that I don't care. It's just too stressful of a job. At least I won't have to travel and I can still be involved in this industry. So study coordinators see that and they don't always want to level up to be a CRA, or they change their mind and don't want to because they see these things. So you can become a site owner, right? Site owner, here's the beautiful thing about being a site owner. You don't need any experience. If you just learned what clinical research is yesterday and you want to open a site today, you can do it. There's no rules that state you have to have this much experience before you can open a site. You have to have this education to open a site. You can be a high school dropout. In fact, I know some high school dropouts that run sites and they do fairly well for themselves. So there's no rules when you open a site and become a business person. Now, there's certainly some things that you should be doing and have knowledge of, and you can hire a consultant like myself to help you out, or you can watch these YouTubes or listen to my podcast for free and try to pick things up. The information's out there. So you can open a site. Here's what you need. You need a PI, a principal investigator. Okay, without a PI, you can't do anything. So get a PI, then figure out, does this PI have patients that we can enroll into studies? If yes, then start applying for studies. If no, then find colleagues or someone else who can be another PI or a sub-I, which is a sub-investigator for your site, to refer patients. Because without a PI, you don't have a research site. But without patients, you're not going to make money. And then without a study, you're not really in business. Okay, so those are the three things you need to be a site owner: a PI, a study, and then patients to enroll. And you, if money's not an issue, you can hire someone to be a study coordinator. You can hire an experienced study coordinator. Or if you have time but no money, you need to learn how to become a study coordinator. It is pretty challenging. It took me about a year to learn 80% of the situations that I've dealt with in this industry over the last 12 years. You deal with them if you're busy enough, meaning two or three sites and enrolling enough patients. You're going to deal with about 80% of the issues you're going to deal with in 1 year. So it's going to take you a year to learn. You're going to make mistakes, but there are people like myself to help you out. There's other consultants too. You might have some friends who are CRAs. There's all kinds of situations or resources that can be of help for you in opening your site. But you don't need anything other than having a physical location. So that could be your PI's private practice, by the way, or you can go lease a space. You need at least 1,600 square feet, in my opinion. You need a locked drug room. Actually, on my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, I have a little tab on there which says open your own clinic, start your own clinic, get equipment. I tell you all the bare essentials you need to get started: drug storage, blood draw chair, ECG machine, centrifuge, conference table, everything down to the waiting room chairs. Okay, it's about $6,000 in equipment. Again, bare minimal equipment you need to start a research site. And You can then hire a study coordinator, or you can be the coordinator yourself. You got to figure that out. But again, you need to know what you do. The good thing about being a site owner is you don't need to level up from anything else. You can. It's oftentimes smarter. Experienced study coordinators and experienced CRAs make the best site owners. Also experienced PIs who worked for another research clinic when they start their own site also make good site owners. So you can level up to being a site owner, and many do, but you don't have to. All right, that's the only one. That's the only, I guess, because it's not a job, I don't know what to call it. It's the only position here where you don't necessarily need to level up from anything to become a site owner. You just got to be very resilient, be very good at dealing with problems on the fly, dealing with rejection, because when you start applying for studies with a new principal investigator, you're going to get a lot of no's, way more no's than yeses. Like 90% of the time you're going to hear no. That's okay. You need to be resilient, and you need to also be willing to weather the storm of not having an income for 6 months, because it's going to take you at least 3 months to get your first study, and then it's going to take you another 3 months to start enrolling patients, and maybe if you're lucky, start receiving some revenue from those patient visits. So 6 months, plan for a year, just to be on the conservative side, plan for a year of no revenue when you open a site. Okay. Now, let me do really quickly the PI. So if you're an MD, there are ways to level up to become a PI, right? You can become a sub-investigator for a research clinic, a hospital, a university in your area. Become a sub-investigator, and then you can level up to become a principal investigator. Or you don't have to level up. If you're an MD and have zero research experience, what's called a research naive, you can actually get considered for many phase 4 clinical trials. These are post-approval studies. So the drug's already been approved. The sponsor doesn't really care whether you have experience in these cases, because the protocol is not that complex. There's not that much for you to necessarily do other than enroll a high volume of patients. So if you can demonstrate that you have that, then you can get you will get the phase 4 study if they need more sites. So if you're an MD and you want to be a PI, either become a sub-I first. I would recommend doing the sub-I route and doing the phase 4 on your own if you can. And then become a PI, and then you can become a site owner as well. Like I just said, some of the best site owners are experienced PIs. But get some experience before you level up all the way to being a site owner, in my experience. And again, once you're a PI and you don't like it, because there are, I think it's 80% of PIs that do their first study never do their second study. They never do another one. And that's because either they don't like research, because they realize it's something that it's not what they thought it would be, which is very common, or the sponsors just don't want to work with the PI anymore because the PI screwed up so badly that they're not going to give them more business, or a combination of the two. So oftentimes, if you realize that, hey, you know, I'm a PI, but I don't like it, but I've been doing it for a year or two, you can actually apply to be a medical monitor for a CRO or for a sponsor. And as a medical monitor, you get paid a really good salary, sometimes $200,000 to $300,000 a year. And you typically work from home or occasionally go to investigator meetings, work out of the CRO or sponsor office. Every company is different, but medical monitor is a very good, less stressful position than being a PI, and guaranteed to make good money. Right, you're not guaranteed to make good money if you run a site, because there's a lot of variables. You got to make sure you have the patients. You got to make sure you're not committing protocol deviations. You got to make sure that you're not having a bunch of screen failures that don't get reimbursed very well. But as a medical monitor, you don't need to worry about any of those things. Right, you're helping the sites watch out for safety issues during the studies. Now, a lot of people, way more than I would have ever guessed prior to doing this consulting stuff, want to start their own CROs. join the club. I wanted to start my own CRO also, and we did. All right, 2016 we launched it, and we have 3 clients, very small projects, but we hope that that snowballs into more projects every year, right? And that's how we're doing it. We're bootstrapping it. We're doing it. We wrote our first protocol. We just developed our SOPs. We have 2 paying clients and 1/3 client on the way. So things are looking good there. But I didn't just wake up one day and open a CRO. I leveled up. You can do that, but it's gonna take a team of people to do that with deep industry knowledge and contacts. No sponsor is just gonna give you a project because you say you have a CRO. No, it's all about, at that level, it's all about who you know, what you've done, who's on your team, and then it becomes how much money do you have to pay your CRAs, because it's CRA salary. One CRA is going to cost you $85K minimum. One CRA. If you need 20 CRAs for a couple protocols, that's a lot of money. Do you have venture capital funds? So we bootstrapped it all. So it's just me and Chris with a small team of other people helping us, support staff, but we're eventually going to start hiring full-time CRAs. But this didn't just happen overnight. We leveled up. I've been a site owner, multiple site owners, for 12 years now. All right. I started with one site for the first 5 years. Then I opened a second site my 6th year. I opened a second site my 6th year. I opened a third site my 7th year. And then we started opening up a bunch of sites all over the place. With the consulting, with YouTube took off, but it took time, right? That's 7, 8, 9, 10 years. It wasn't until my 11th year where I started thinking about doing the CRO stuff. And that's really because what I did first, even before I did the CRO, was a SMO, site management organization. Even though we don't market ourselves as an SMO, we use that business model. We have different independently owned and operated sites that we have influence over, whether we own some equity in them or whether they are clients of ours through our consulting arm. We have a network of sites. That's an SMO, right? We leverage a lot of things. We scale a lot of things. We scale the SOPs. We scale the contract and budget negotiations. We scale the training. There's a lot of things that we scale. That's an SMO for all intents and purposes. So doing that for a couple of years and then leveling up to the CRO, because at the end of the day, what the sponsors care about is what can you do, how much money can you save them, how much time can you save them, how much influence do you have over the sites, how much control do you have over patient recruitment, and are these sites going to produce clean data, or are we going to be wasting our money, throwing our money away at sites that enroll patients that don't belong in the study, and then the FDA won't even look at the data, right? That's what the sponsors care about. So how can you have an answer for those objectives or objections without having some kind of experience as a site owner? At least you maybe can bypass the SMO route, although I don't think that'd be smart either. I think you should go site owner first, then SMO, which is a network of sites, and then a CRO. So a lot of leveling up here, a lot of time. This took 30 minutes, but I'm glad we did it. Got to go in depth on it, and let me know where your thoughts are, right? Leave your questions, comments, concerns, reviews on the podcast, and I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. So hey, everybody, thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com.
Thank you very much.